Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And today we have a special episode with Mr. Olympia, Chris Dickerson, and we are going to talk about season five. We're going to go back to season five for this episode. So it'll be season five, episode 14, and our guest is going to be, as I said, Chris Dickerson. And Chris was a winner of the NABBA Mr. Universe several times. He entered the very first one in 1970, and the year he won the Mr. America contest that year. And he beat out Franco Colombo and won the short class, but lost the overall to Frank Zane. And then Chris came again in 1971 and won again the short class, but lost the overall to Ken Waller. And then Chris came back in 73, and he won his very first NABBA Universe. And then he came back in 74, a year later, and he won his first NABBA Universe in the professional division. So Chris has got a big history competing over in London in the NABBA Mr. Universe. So I know those victories are very special to him. So we brought him back on to talk about that. All right. I did want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Redcon One. At Redcon One, everybody wants to be a champion. Everybody wants to be the best. Redcon One believes in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premier clinically dosed pre-workout, Total War, is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then you can fuel your body after those workouts with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs. And the carb source is coming from sweet potatoes and oats, and it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And be sure to check out the new MRE bars also on the website, redcon1.com. And if you go on there to order anything, make sure you enter the discount code LEGENDS, and you'll get a 15% discount off your order. And Aaron Singerman, my friend and the owner of Redcon One, will know that you're listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And we're also brought to you by Old School Labs. With so many supplements on the market, it can be hard to know which brand is the right one. As a three-time Natural Mr. Universe and the first Natural Mr. Olympia, the quality of supplements and knowing what I'm taking is very important to me, which is why Old School Labs is giving you 12% off your purchase when you go to oldschoollabs.com. So use the code LEGEND12 at the checkout, and you will get 12% off your order. And make sure to try their new protein powder, Brawn Protein, B-R-A-W-N, Vintage Brawn Protein, and check that out. That is a protein powder that is made with milk, eggs, and beef. So make sure you check that out. I use that every day. Go to oldschoollabs.com. Make sure you use the code LEGEND12 at the checkout at oldschoollabs.com. All right, speaking of Old School Labs, I will be heading out to California this weekend to do a commercial, I believe, a video for Brawn Protein for Old School Labs. I will be heading out there on Thursday this week, and it'll just be a short trip. I'll be coming back on Saturday, which is kind of good because I'm training hard and I'm staying on my diet and getting leaner, so I'm really hitting training hard. Things are going good from that end. I want to thank the guys over at Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, their podcast, for having me on their Advices radio station this week. It was on Tuesday, and I did an interview with Vijay Puri and Scott McNally, which I really enjoyed, and I think they really enjoyed it too. So we were talking about my new book, Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, which is now on sale on Amazon if you want to check that out. But we talked about the book, and we talked about my training and my diet for the years that when I was competing as a natural bodybuilder, and I won the Natural Olympia and the Natural Universe. And we talked a little bit about old school bodybuilding, which they love to talk about, and a lot of people love to talk about. Old school bodybuilding is gaining a lot of interest. People love talking about the 80s and the 90s. Those were the old days of bodybuilding. And, of course, here at Bodybuilding Legends Podcast, that's what we're talking about. So in our new series, we are talking about old school bodybuilding, and we've talked last week to my friends Bob Gaida, who was the 1966 Mr. America, and his friends Al Yakich and Terry Strand, and that was a really interesting interview. We talked a lot about Chicago bodybuilding in the 1960s, especially Sergio Oliva and Rock Stonewall. So I really enjoyed that interview. We'll have to have those guys back on because I'm sure they got a lot more stories. And so I've been in contact with Rick Valente, who I hooked up with when I was out in California. We did an interview out there for Old School Labs. So I told Rick I want to have him on the podcast because I'm sure he's got a lot of stories about the old days at Gold's Gym back in the 80s when he first started working out there. And Rick is good friends with Robbie Robinson, so he has threatened that Robbie is ready to do his interview with the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So I'm hoping to get Robbie on the Skype or on the phone in the next week or two. And, you know, Robbie sometimes doesn't like giving interviews, but he said he would do it. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And we're also going to be talking to Larry Jackson. And Larry was the Mr. California winner in 1979. He was a great bodybuilder in the California area. He was one of the best Mr. California winners ever. And so I ran into Larry when I was out at Gold's Gym a couple of weeks ago. When I was training with Phil Williams early in the morning, he was there. So we're supposed to do an interview with him this week. So we might have that interview up by next week, or we'll be talking to Rick next week. We'll see which one comes up first. But I'm looking forward to talking to both of those guys. I'm also trying to get to talk to Eddie Giuliani. And of course, Eddie was one of the staples of the old Gold Gym crew with Joe Gold and Zabel Kwasuski, and he was in the movie Pumping Iron. He hung around with Arnold and all those guys, so I'm sure Eddie's got a ton of stories, so we're hoping to talk to Eddie pretty soon too. So I'm still plugging away trying to get these interviews, and I might have another big name coming up too that we're going to do an interview with. But this week on my Bodybuilding Legends Show website, we are going to have a video interview with John Torelli, and I know we had John on the podcast a couple months ago. But this will be our video interview, so it will contain a lot of pictures and a lot of video clips. So you want to check that out. So make sure to check out my website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, this week. And, of course, if you're on my YouTube channel, you'll see the video there. And if you're on my Facebook or Instagram channel, I'll announce it there, too. By the way, on Instagram, we do have our own page on Instagram. So if you want to go, if you're a member of Instagram, check out Bodybuilding Legends Show on Instagram and subscribe to that. And you'll check out all our updates that I do on the website or on the podcast. All right, and I want to mention also we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. And they offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. They offer very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few reasons to give them a call and experience firsthand what sets them apart from the rest. Their office is in Tampa, Florida, and you can call them directly at 813-922-8939 or just go to their website at flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com, and check out their website, and they will give you a free consultation if you tell them that you listen to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll also give you 20% off of anything you order from Florida Alternative Medicine. And again, their number is 813-922-8939. So I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine, as well as Redcon One and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So here's our interview with 1982 Mr. Olympia, Chris Dickerson, where we're going to talk about his NABBA Mr. Universe victories as well as his Mr. Olympia victory. Here you go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest with us this week, Mr. Chris Dickerson, 1982 Mr. Olympia. And we're going to talk about Chris's career, especially in the NABBA Universe victories. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, thank you, John.
Good.
Very well.
How's your health? How's everything these days? Good?
Health is fine.
Yeah.
My outlook is usually positive.
Yeah.
But getting older and recognize that.
Yeah.
And accepting it for the most part.
Right. As we all are, right?
Yes. Exactly.
Well, Chris, I want to talk to you about, I know we did an interview a couple of years ago, but I want to bring you back and talk a little bit about your NABBA Mr. Universe victories, because we are doing a series of interviews about that. We just had Boyer Co on a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about the good old days of bodybuilding. And he was saying that, you know, that his NABBA Mr. Universe victories were probably some of his most memorable victories because there's so much history involved with the NABBA Universe.
That's true. And that was the step after the America. And
right.
It was the natural order of things from go from Mr. America. And if you were lucky, you were sponsored. Your mm-hmm. way was paid to London for the Universe. And that was part of it, the travel to Europe. And I had never been, first time getting a passport. And it was thrilling being there. Really, it was.
Yeah, Boyer said that York Barbell used to pay for all the Mr. America winners. And I guess the year that he went, Jim Haislop won the America the year before. And the year before that was Dennis Tenorino. And I guess both Dennis and Jim got beat at the Universe. So when they got to Boyer, they weren't going to pay for Boyer. So I guess he didn't get his paid. They said they would reimburse him, but they never did.
That's the way it goes, isn't it?
Yeah. So, Chris, you won the America in 1970 then, right?
1970, yes. Another first for me. I guess it sounds dated to say you broke the color barrier now, but then it was news being a first African-American winner. And so that was a thrill, too.
Yeah.
Now people say, well, what was the big deal? Which is a good thing, actually, really.
Yeah, but you're right. You were the very first African-American winner of the AAU Mr. America, which is a really big honor, right?
Yes, it was. It was very moving, really.
Yeah. So in that Mr. America, Casey Viator was in that too, wasn't he?
Yes, Casey was second his first year entering.
Wow. Okay.
And was only, I think he was still 19. He may have been 20, but he was by far the youngest competitor.
I think he was 19 when he won it, so he must have been 18 when you beat him.
18? Well, you see, I stand corrected. Wow. Yeah, that's quite impressive.
So how was your trip going over to London to compete in the Mr. Universe? Because I know you're a classical arts fan. You're a big fan of opera, so that had to be that had to be something special going over to London, right?
It was wonderful, yes. I included a tour after the competition. The London was about 3 days, thrilling, really. But after that, I thought, well, a friend and I decided to make a vacation out of it. So we went to London, and I'm flying high after my victory is winning my class.
Right.
So this was 1970. So I was determined to see as much of Europe as I could on my shoestring budget. So from London, we flew to Paris, from Paris to Rome, from Rome to Munich, Amsterdam, then back to New York.
Holy cow.
So while in Munich, I went to the National Theater, the old opera company, which we bombed during World War II.
Oh, really?
And they have since reconstructed. And I saw my first Wagnerian opera called Tannhäuser. And the German, of course. So that was really a thrill for me, too. It was quite a trip.
Yeah. Really. Wow. Yeah, I know. I remember you were a connoisseur of classical music because I remember when you were doing the commentating on the Mr. Olympia contest or any of the professional competitions that were held in the 1980s when they hired you as a commentator. And someone Muhammad McAway would come out and pose to classical music, you'd be able to recognize that, you know?
That's true, yes. And I would use it myself at times.
Yeah, yes.
It lends itself to, because, you know, bodybuilding is sort of like opera. It epitomizes what we can call idealism.
Mm-hmm.
And music, it's high bodybuilding. It's, you know, ideal body, all the work and all of that. And then you've got the classical music. Well, what a combination that is. So Yes, and I admire the statues, is particularly in Rome, of the male statues there and the fountains and all. It's been a wonderful, wonderful journey so far. It really has been.
That's great that you mentioned that, Chris, because, you know, I always look at bodybuilding and I look at the stars of the 70s and the 80s and how they employed their posing with their physique.
Yes.
And it was such an artistic thing, or it should be an artistic thing. And I think a lot of that is lost today. You know, I don't think a lot of people spend a lot of time with their posing, or especially doing it to classical music. I very rarely see that anymore.
It's true. A part of it is the fault of the rule book. The rules don't give, there's no category for the posing that would add to your score.
Right.
But back in our day, that was around. And it was important.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, there's no need to practice. And I remember as a coach during the latter part of my career, I'd feel bad because the guys would pay me and some of the girls for help on their posing, and they wouldn't get to do it. Or if they did it, it didn't count for anything.
Yeah.
And so people do the most muscular, as we call it, the crab pose, and then to walk across the stage and face the audience on that side and do the crab, then walk across the stage. It's just downright, it's just sort of not interesting to watch. Not at all.
Yeah, because when I look at the physiques, I don't mean to, you know, beat up bodybuilding, modern day bodybuilding too much today, but, you know, when I look at the bodybuilders like you and Frank Zane, I just mentioned Muhammad McAway, of course, Lee Labrada, Bob Paris, all you guys and many others, you really took into mind the aesthetics of the physique. And then when you did your poses, you did poses that emphasized the aesthetics of your physique. And then your posing routine also emphasized that. And so it all worked together, and it really was, if done correctly, it really is an art form. And I think a lot of that is lost today because we don't have champion bodybuilders like yourself or Frank Lee Labrada or any people like that at the top who are kind of leading the way and setting the example.
Yes. Unfortunately, too, they have to be so big now and
you're
puffed up with God knows what. So it would be pretty difficult for these guys to do some of those movements that we did.
If
you don't practice the posing during the training and you got this huge body, then you say, well, how do you do it? How do you get down there in a lunge or some of those things? So it's just it was a different sport. It is what it is. And like you, I'm not knocking bodybuilding of today. We're just pointing out the differences.
Yeah, and it seems like the judging, too, it emphasized or it rewarded people who were aesthetic. And I think especially in the NABBA universe, they looked at that and they looked at the symmetry of the physique. It wasn't just about the most massive or the most ripped guy. It was the guy who also had really good symmetry, just standing relaxed. And they really emphasized that with the judging.
That's true. And I'm glad to say I won the Olympia in London. And they appreciate the aesthetics, as we refer to it as, even more than we did then. We as a country always went for the kind of, for size, you know. Saying we don't appreciate the cuts, but you had to have it all together back in our day here and particularly over there in London.
Yeah. So let's talk about that first NABBA Universe that you competed in. That was in 1970, the year you won the America. What's always interesting to me about this NABBA Universe is the way they did the judging, particularly back then, where they did it in a separate room. I think they did it on Friday night, right? And that's when they did all the judging. And you were right there on the judges. It wasn't on a stage, and they just moved everybody around. And it was really, like you said, I think in an interview we did, it was raw. You know, there really was no lighting. And you were right in there in front of the judges. So what was that like after having competed in the AAU? That had to be a different experience,
It was not much different, actually, because the AAU, we didn't have spots either.
Okay.
The pre-judging was done natural lighting, You didn't have a spot.
Yeah.
Whereas, but in London, it was done actually not at night, but in the early afternoon of the same day. And then in the evening was the final.
Okay.
On a flat floor in London. And, you know, they had the lighting from the street. But I don't think there was any lighting, any electricity going. Lighting-wise.
Wow.
So, yeah. But you see, it actually showed us more honestly what we did have.
Yeah.
You see, because a spot sort of gives you the benefit of the doubt if you're not particularly in shape. So
yeah.
They didn't want that advantage, if you call it that. So we were flat floor, and we were called in. I remember being so nervous, and I loved it. It was thrilling, but my heart was beating a mile a minute.
Oh, really?
You're called out, and you're in a line in front of the judges there, the judges' table there, just much like the AAU than that day.
Yeah.
And so you're called on, and you do your posing individually, and you don't know the results until the evening.
Yeah.
So then you get ready for the evening, and that's when the audience is there. Now, that was done in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And there's old theater there in London, very ornate. It looked like an opera house itself.
Yeah.
And then that's where the final was held. It was by Victoria Station. I remember that.
Okay.
In the neighborhood of Victoria Station. Yes. And so you got out. I was disappointed at first.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized what a good thing it was just simply to win my class, my division.
Yeah.
And so I won my division. Frank Zane won the overall.
Right. That was your first time competing against Frank, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we go back. That's when I was called out as the winner of the division.
Mm-hmm.
What I did that I later felt very proud of was winning over Franco Colombo.
Yeah, who was second.
Now, yeah, Franco was not a good sport. And in fact, he was demanding more prejudging.
Oh, really?
The Dickerson's won, I feel like, and I think we should do this judging more. So the promoter, I remember Oscar Heidenstam, he was the promoter, God rest his soul. He said, Frank, I think you should give it a miss next year. The way he put it, give it a miss.
And wow.
Yeah, but he was not a good sport. I hate to down him this way, so we might beep this out. But I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, so you and Franco had totally different kind of physiques. He was thicker, maybe more muscular, and you were had more of the symmetry, more of the shape.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Right.
The English could see that.
Mm-hmm.
And Franco and I had never gone toe-to-toe before.
Right.
So that
what'd you think of Frank Zane? Because that was your first time against him.
Frank Zane was wonderful. And he was a real champion. And I had to congratulate him. And I don't know what I thought. I thought, but he had it all.
Mm-hmm.
He had it all. And he doesn't carry a lot of muscle. When you look at him up close,
right.
But what he does is so delusional, and
right.
He's such a showman that you think this guy must weigh 250 pounds.
Right.
Because
right.
On stage, he's just absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
He's not a big guy, but, you know, I've seen him win his Mr. Olympia victories. But he's, like you said, he's so prepared. Everything's perfect. His hand is perfect. His posing
is perfect. Every finger, every toe, he knows where every body part is pointing.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, he's quite a guy. I admire him to this day.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So the next year was a special year also because you went back to the Navy Universe and again you won the short class. Ken Waller won the overall that year in the amateur.
Yeah, Ken Waller. Yeah, I was really disappointed at that time because you see, my coach Bill Pearl,
right,
went toe to toe with Serge Oliva.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I thought, wouldn't it be perfect if my coach won the pro and me, his protege, won the amateur?
Yeah.
Wasn't meant to be.
Right.
Wasn't meant to be. So Ken Waller won the overall. And again, I won the division.
Yeah.
So that was that.
How did you feel you looked that year, Chris, compared to 1970, the first time you did it?
Oh, I was making gains the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was better in 71.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And 72. That's true. Yeah.
How did it feel being there with Bill? Because I know he was a big influence on you and he was your coach. And that was actually his last competition.
Yes, that's true. Well, I remember Bill standing there in the winner's circle, there on the top of the platform. It's mm-hmm. like tiers of three, as you know. And I'm standing there on the bottom side as a, you know, we're all on stage.
Yeah.
And how loving he was. He turned to me and he said, "Are you okay, buddy?" I remember that. Because he knew I was disappointed.
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah," I bowed my head up and down, yeah. But I was really heartbroken.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that was quite a year. And then winning, it was, wow. I never posed before such an appreciative audience in my life.
Oh, really?
They just went crazy. And they're so impressed by Americans because mm-hmm. they've read about us in the magazines.
Yeah.
We were pretty dominant back then. Not so much now. You got more countries competing.
Yeah.
But we were like legendary to them. And I remember signing a book and pictures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They just were so... Oh, so appreciative of having us over there.
Yeah.
It was a great experience. And so when I won it, I was just delighted. Really, it was, I realized what I had done.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, life is, if we just wait, it falls right.
Mm-hmm.
It falls perfectly right because.
Right. It doesn't always happen when we want it, but
I say that even though Donald Trump's president. But, easy, Chris, easy. Don't go there. But, you know, you're placed where you should be placed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had another year. And then when it was right, 1973, there I was.
Yeah.
So you look back, it takes perspective to see. And, you know, hindsight to see how things
should be
or ought to be, you know. So
right.
I'm very, very thankful. Yeah, 73 was my year. I won the overall amateur title.
Now, I want to go back to Bill Pearl because I know he was the guy who got you started in training because I remember when we did this interview before, you
yeah.
said that when you started training, you went to Bill's gym.
Oh, yeah. Bill made me what I am today.
Yeah.
He would say, "No, Chris, you did the work." But no, he really did coach me. And that's why I'm of the opinion that every bodybuilder should have a coach.
Yeah.
Only one, though, because if you listen to too many people, it confuses you. But
yeah.
Bill influenced my life in so many ways. I even imitated him sometimes. The way he would dress, is he wore big checkered shirts and I've dressed that way myself. And he never, ever went to show off his body.
Yeah.
You couldn't miss it. And that's why he'd say, "Well, if you've got it, people will see it."
Right,
and it's so true. So I never strutted around in a tank top or
mm-hmm.
a tight-fitting shirt out in public. I don't know. I might regret it now, but never did that.
Right.
Bill didn't, and I'm sure that's why I didn't either.
Yeah, I remember reading an article about Bubba once.
Yes. I'm straight from the subject.
No. I remember reading an article by Bill once, and he said he always trained his forearms because when he wore shirts that covered his arms, his forearms were always exposed. So he always wanted to have good forearms.
Yeah. Right. He'd have me working forearms, doing those wrist curls and everything.
How did he help you with your posing, Chris?
Starting out with the music. He would suggest I find a piece of music that I like. And he always went with it. If he said, if you like it, that's going to help you. You're 50% there.
Okay.
But then we would start flat-footed on the floor and just without the music, we'd play it. But then we'd stand away from it and just in the quiet, work it. And the music would be in my head and his head. Mm-hmm. And we'd go one step, two steps. And he always said, posing starts from the feet.
Mm-hmm.
It's always from the feet, from the ground up. And your footing is what we worked on diligently at first.
Okay. Yeah.
And which way the feet faced and all of that. And so I learned it properly from the beginning. I was very fortunate. And then
Did he start off like choosing poses that your body looked good in and then figured out how you could transition it into a routine?
Well, I'm sure he could tell.
Okay.
Because if I would suggest a pose, he may say, no, that's not a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew in his mind it didn't show me to advantage.
Okay.
So he, without saying it that way, he did. Yeah, he did. And but there are certain poses called the compulsories that you couldn't get away from.
Right.
And those seven compulsories, you started out with that, you know. And so I memorized mine. So during one of the rounds, round two, in fact, when the compulsory round that everybody had to do, I would start and I would continue without being told what the next pose should be.
Oh, okay.
So before they'd say, okay, double bicep. Okay, side tricep. I'd do that side tricep before they had a chance to say anything. And that showed the judges that I had memorized it and that I had done my homework.
You were probably one of the first ones to do that, right, Chris?
Probably. Yes, I was. I was the only one in those contests, yes.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about Bill's victory that year also, because I've done many interviews about that, and everybody said he really looked
amazing. Bill's
victory
was so deserving.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that it was not only his physique, his winning, but it's who he was, what he represented, and his having done his homework and the professionalism up there. And his competition, God rest his soul, Sergio, he was sweating, but he would do a pose and look down. It wasn't flowing. So you could tell he was winging it.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't have the nerve to get up there and wing it. You know, oh no. So that helped Bill a lot.
Yeah.
And when he hit a pose, it was so dynamic and he was so much into it that he brought you in. It's a funny way of saying it. But he would, of great performers, bring the audience into them. You know, whatever it is, if you're a singer or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're so much into what you're doing, you bring them into what you're doing. And that's what Bill was a master at.
Yeah.
He really was. And he was so appreciative. He was such a good victory. And I was so proud of my coach I really was. And he came back to L.A., and we'd be back at the gym, and he brought his trophy there for people to see there on the counter. And everybody was just so happy for him. But he was a modest guy. Bill would say, yes, well, thank you, thank you. He wouldn't want to talk about it.
Right.
To this day, if you call Bill Pearl right now and say, now, Bill, how do you feel about winning? He'd say, oh, I was very lucky. It was just, I was just, the Lord was with me. So he doesn't give himself much credit. But that's kind of what I learned from and I grew up with, you know, that sort of philosophy.
What a guy to learn from, huh?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you're lucky to have a coach like him.
Oh, tell me about it. I really was. I still, and we're good friends. I talked to Bill just last week.
Oh, really?
And
great.
We stay in touch. Yeah, and his wife Judy picks up the phone, and she'll give the phone to Bill, and we'll exchange some pleasantries, and then Bill and I'll get on the phone and talking. So yeah, I remain a friend of Bill's.
Oh, that's great.
Say.
How's he doing, Chris?
He's doing very well. That's about what he would say too, and that's about all he'd say. He's not going to go into detail. If he felt awful, he wouldn't say so.
Right.
So you never really know when you ask Bill. Oh, I'm fine, Chris. I'm fine. And then we go to something else. He's so evasive that way.
Yeah.
But that's part of his charm.
Well, that's great. I'm glad he's doing okay, because I know we're all getting up there. I think Bill was born in 1930, so he'll be 88 here this year, right?
9 years apart.
Okay.
So I'm 78. So he's 87.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, his birthday is Halloween.
Yeah.
And it's easy to remember. He says, I was born on Halloween, and I've been caring people ever since. And that's his remark. Yeah. He's full of them, though. Yeah. He's very subtle humor. Very subtle.
Going back to your NABBA universe here, you took 72 off because you felt like you needed a year off to make the improvements in your physique, right?
Yes, I did.
And then you came back in 73, and then that was the year that you won.
73 won
overall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen pictures from you in that show, and you really were improved. Your physique was remarkably thicker and bigger.
Yes, I was thicker. And it was just, when you make improvements, it's cuts. His sides is all together.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you do it. And other people see it sometimes more than you do yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is true. Yes. But that was a wonderful victory in 1973. And then in 74, I won the professional.
Right.
So they were back-to-back overall victories for me.
And you beat Boyer Coe in 74. Another guy that you've had a lot of history with.
Uh-huh. No, I didn't beat Boyer Coe then.
In the pro?
In the pro? Was he in it? I'm starting to be asked. Okay, then I did.
He was second in your class, and Tony Emmett. Tony Emmett was third.
Oh, okay. You see, you know more about it. Boy and I have been talking so much ever since.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
He's a great guy, Boy, and I were good friends.
Yeah, he is a great guy.
Mm.
So of those victories in the NABBA universe, Chris, which one was your favorite? Was it 73 when you finally won the overall?
Yes.
Yeah.
73. 74 was like the frosting on the cake.
Yeah.
But 73 was the cake. That's true.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
You came back again, right, in 76, right, in the NABBA universe?
Yeah, I should not have. I was not in the condition I should have been at.
Yeah, I forgot you were in that one. And Tony Emmett got first, and Sergio Bray won the over.
So we don't talk about that.
Right.
Bill Pearl would not have allowed me to go in it, by the way, I'm sure.
But really?
I felt it's a lesson, and I've learned it the hard way that you cannot – see yourself. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was really in shape. Anyway, he never said, I told you so. That's not in his personality.
Right.
And I didn't even confer with Bill then. Mm-hmm. I just went over there. And anyway, it was one of those things. But the audience loved me just as much. And they remembered me as their champion.
Okay.
It was a wonderful time. Yes. I miss those days. And, of course, the whole world was so different. London
was
different then.
I mean,
London now is just not the same city.
Mm-hmm.
It's more population and more tall buildings, but it's not the traditional city we think of.
Mm.
And unfortunately, they've imitated some of the worst things that we have.
You know?
But it's, the world's just screwed up. Excuse me.
It really is.
It's everywhere.
So what made you decide to go over to the IFBB in 1979, Chris?
Well, I'll tell you honestly, I learned that Bill Pearl was the head judge.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, wow. And I never thought I'd, go into that. But
yeah.
Knowing he was the top man,
mm-hmm.
I said, well, heck. So I went in the universe, the Olympia.
The Olympia,
I was sixth place the first year.
Yeah.
And I was right up there with them, though. I came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And they sort of didn't expect to see me there, but I made a good impression. So I jumped from sixth to second the mm-hmm. following year, and second and finally first. But that's another contest, yeah. But that Bill Pearl being in the top position made me decide to try it.
Okay. Yeah, I was at that show, Chris, in 79, and I remember seeing you. And I never saw you before in person. I knew who you were, obviously, because I read about your victories in NAVA and Mr. America. But I was really impressed with your physique. You were really bigger and thicker than I thought you would have been,
Oh, yes, yeah. There in Columbus there.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Veterans Auditorium.
Yeah. Oh,
I can see it now, right? Yes.
And that was a great show because Frank Zane was probably at his best, and Robbie Robinson was in that, and Boyer Coe looked really good, and Mike Mensel looked really good.
Yeah. It was a good show.
How did it feel going over to the IFBB? I mean, it seemed like they welcomed you pretty well, huh?
Yes, they did. I was not a favorite of Joe in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, Bill Pearl told me, now, Chris, I'm not supposed to tell you this. I was out there now. I moved back to L.A. now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm training with Bill. He says, but Joe Weider called me in his office up the Woodland Hills, the big office.
Yeah.
And he asked me, how come Chris is winning all the contests? What's going on here? Bill says, well, I'll tell you what's going on. Chris Dickerson does his homework.
Yeah.
And by the time you see him, he's put hours and hours in of preparation. That's what's mm-hmm. going on. Joe couldn't say nothing to that. But Bill says, now, Joe doesn't want you, Chris. So just know that, and you've got to be twice as good as the other guys.
Yeah.
Or you may not. So he put the warning sign in me. And I said, okay, to myself. And but I remember that. Things like that stick in your mind forever, don't they?
Yeah. Well, so, about a month after that Olympia in 79, you did that Canada Pro Cup. And it was a stacked lineup. And you won. I remember that show.
Yeah, twice in a row. Bill Gavoich was the promoter.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. That was in Hamilton, Ontario.
Yeah.
And then Toronto at the O'Keefe Center, I think it was called.
Okay. You beat Mike Mensur, you beat Boyer Coe, you beat Robbie, all those guys that beat you at the Olympia, you beat all of them.
I know, yeah.
You were more ripped for that contest, right, Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. It's hard to see yourself, like I say. Yes. Other people, you can see me clearer than I could see myself.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, it was a wonderful victory.
And then what really amazed me, too, about your career, Chris, was how you were able to stay in shape for all those Grand Prix shows, because they would do, what, 4, 5, 6 Grand Prix shows in a row, like every couple of weeks, every month, and you were in shape for all of them.
I was ready, yeah. Well, you know what I would do? What I would do, honestly, is I'd have a competition, and then that same night, after it's over, I'd have a pig out.
Okay.
I would eat everything I shouldn't have. You know, I ate a whole pie once.
Right.
And I would eat prime rib and salad with Roquefort dressing and all those calories. And I'd go to sleep on that. So the next day, I would go to the gym, hit the steam room if I could find one. And that was it. And I had had my fun, and I'm back training seriously again. But I'd get it out of my system right away.
Just that night, you know? Just the night of the show.
Yes, exactly.
What kind of diet were you following back then, Chris? Was it real low carbohydrates?
This is kind of a conventional. I wouldn't eat meat.
Mm-hmm.
I'd eat chicken, breast usually, and the turkey. And you know, I'd have eggs, more egg white than yolk.
Mm-hmm.
One yolk in there to help me digest the white.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of like...
Low fat then, pretty low fat.
Yeah, pretty much,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And fruit for breakfast. That was fruit sugar that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And cantaloupe and
like
that, strawberries.
So high protein, low fat, but you had some carbs too for the energy.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm thinking your posing had to be a big help in all those victories too, right? In the Grand Prix shows, because they were judging the posing back then. Yeah.
Absolutely. My skin was paper thin.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you could almost see through it.
Right. Right.
And I'd do my beach part. You know, I'd lie there, and the sun would. Not only get me even darker, but it would draw the water out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was all preparation. I just did only that. That was what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. People who were not around back then may not realize it, but you may not have been the biggest bodybuilder, but you were built like a statue, you know, and you had such great symmetry in the definition and the way you moved and everything. I think that's what contributed to all those victories that you did.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yes. It was a good time. It was a very good time in my life. And I miss it, but then I realized that, you know, everything passes on.
Yeah,
and now this is the good time. Now we've got to see it that way.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. Well, before we finish talking, Chris, let's talk a little bit about that victory in the Mr. Olympia that you had, because that was back in London. So that had to remind you a little bit of your NABBA Universe days, and that was the one you finally did it after 2 second places in a row.
Right, and Bill Pearl flew over with me.
Wow, okay. That'd make it more
special. We shared the same hotel room,
mm-hmm.
and he would look at me and he'd say, all right, let's be careful here, Chris. He watched me. He says, yeah, I don't want you binging out. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
He knew I wouldn't, but he wanted to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went over with me, and he said in the audience, he says, now, I can't help you now. I'm not going to use my prestige to help glorify you. That's not fair. I said, sure,
okay.
Bill. So he sat in the audience just like anybody else, and I did my thing, and then that was prejudging. Then we went back, and it was all on the same day. And then, I began to cramp terribly. That's right.
Oh, really?
Oh, my body was cramping all over.
Uh-huh.
So we went to get oranges. I remember that. And we got orange slices.
Okay.
And I would eat the slices, and my body just came around. Because the sugar from the oranges, my body was crying for it, I guess.
Who did you feel was your main competition that year, Chris?
Well, Tom Platz is getting a lot of publicity.
Yeah, after the year before.
No. And he was one of Joe's favorites.
Okay.
And I knew that he didn't have my balance. But I thought, I wonder if he'll die. Oh, Frank Zane, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Class was sixth. Yeah. Frank Zane. And he was a previous winner, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So, and he skipped it.
And he skipped it in 81, yeah.
81, yes. So, and then Frank Zane and I end up being the last two standing.
Right, right.
And I remember his whispering over to me, he says, I sort of knew this is the way it would end up. I said, oh. So then they called his name for second, mm-hmm. and he gave me a big bear hug. And I thought, oh, my God, I won this thing. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, that's the way that happened. But things like that.
It had to be special beating Frank, too, because I know you had a lot of respect for him.
He was such a good sport. And he'd give me credit, you know, because
mm-hmm.
he could see it.
Yeah.
So, So that was that.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl picked out the music
mm-hmm.
called Trumpets Volunteer.
Yeah.
And the English sort of anthem, not really, but it's played, you know, they play it often and special events.
Yeah.
And I think they played it at Princess Di's wedding, and you hear mm-hmm. it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, let's play their music. So he picked up that for me, and we went on and worked on that posing every day, 3 o'clock, without fail. Posing time, it was like... But the thing about posing, practicing, is you get harder each time doing it.
Yeah.
You flex those muscles, and they're getting harder, and they're working.
Mm-hmm.
And you work the whole body that way. It's sort of like an isometric, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. But preparation for that was wonderful. And then he flew over with me, and so that was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Didn't you go to Bill's ranch in 1980 when you were training for the Olympia? Didn't you stay out there?
Oh, yeah. I went up there 3 times.
Okay.
Let's see. Training for the Olympia twice, yeah. That's right. About 3 times I went up to Bill's ranch.
Would you stay out there and train, Chris, or would you just go out and visit him and have him watch you pose?
Oh, no. I just closed shop.
Okay.
I had my office above Gold's Gym on the second floor. Selling
uh-huh.
my products, my own protein and t-shirts like that. But
uh-huh.
I had a wonderful lady sort of running it in my absence.
Okay.
So I was 3 months just in training. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. It's almost like a fighter going away to training camp.
That's right. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I really feel prepared then after doing that, right?
Oh, right. But I knew I had to be. I had to be flawless.
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
That I was, but you're certainly aiming for that.
Right,
yes.
Right. So out of all those big victories with the Navy Universe, the Olympia, and the America, which ones really resonate with you, Chris? Which ones were really special?
I'd say the Olympia.
The Olympia, okay, yeah.
Yeah, 82 in the Olympia.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it seemed like that was a special moment. I remember seeing the victory speech he made when you got the trophy.
My two favorite years was like 70 and then 82.
Okay.
It was difficult to say my very, very favorite because mm-hmm. I've been so blessed with such a good career.
Yeah, I know with champions like yourself, you know, you have so many victories, but usually there's like a couple that stand out. You know, I've asked all the champions that I've interviewed, and sometimes it's
right.
even your first contest that you go in, you know, your first victory. That's the one that really stands out a lot sometimes too, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah. But then on the other hand, my very first contest, I came in third at the Long Beach Y, tiny little wooden trophy. But he started, that was in 65.
65, wow, okay.
Yeah, right.
All right, Chris. Well, I want to thank you again for joining us on this Sunday to talk again about your career. I appreciate talking to you again. Glad your health is good. I'm glad you're feeling good out there in Florida. So thanks again for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast.
Thank you, John Hansen. And also, I want to wish you a happy Father's Day.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Okay. God bless.
You too. Bye. Take care, Chris. Bye. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Chris Dickerson again for joining us. And we will see you guys next week. I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine, Redcon One, and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Have a great week, everybody. See you next week. Take care.